Hi, friends. Every year, more and more schools are providing some kind of summer math practice for their students. And we want to say thank you to the many Principal Matters listeners who have chosen Summer Pops as their summer math resource. For new listeners, Summer Pops are workbooks designed for elementary and middle school students to practice their math over the summer. And after looking over the workbooks myself, I have found Summer Pops to be engaging, easy to use, and content rich. Demand is high this year, so act soon. Visit summerpopsworkbooks.com today. Summer Pops math workbooks are published by Better Learning Education. All workbooks are printed in the USA. Principal Matters Podcast, episode 392. Hi, friends. This is Will Parker, host of Principal Matters, the School Leaders Podcast, where each week we bring you inspiring, innovative, and imaginative ideas for your own school leadership. You can check out all our resources at williamdparker.com. This week, you're going to hear a guest interview where Jen Schwanke takes the mic and talks to Kim Strobel about small steps to big joy. Kim Strobel is a motivational powerhouse, inspiring lives and organizations as a keynote speaker, leadership consultant, and happiness coach. Overcoming personal adversities, she's embarked on a journey of self-discovery, finding the key to shifting mindsets and achieving remarkable growth. She challenges the outdated notions of success and advocates for a life of passion, purpose, and potential. When she and Jen jump into this conversation, you're going to be so inspired and challenged by Kim's vulnerability and authenticity as they talk about all kinds of things, including toxic positivity, but also the importance of taking courageous actions to do the things that you know are best for you. So thank you, Jen Schwanke, for hosting this week. And thank you, Kim Strobel, for being a guest. I hope you guys enjoy this episode, Small Steps to Big Joy.
Welcome, Principal Matters listeners. This is Dr. Jen Schwanke. I should start with an introduction. I always fail to do that. But I want to welcome you to our podcast today and welcome an extremely special guest today. So much energy, so much fun. Full disclosure, listeners, I don't know Kim Strobel all that well either. So we're going to get to know one another in this podcast. I've got some questions to ask her about her work. And I want to turn it over to her to give her own biography. However, you say, Kim, on LinkedIn that you are a keynote speaker, you're an author, you're a happiness coach, you're an educator, and you do professional development. So tell us what that means. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Yes. You know, sometimes, Jen, I have coined myself as the happiness coach because I've studied happiness and well-being for 20 years. But sometimes when I'm getting introduced on a stage and the person up there is so full of like gusto and they're like, we have a happiness coach in the house. And I'm like, 80% of those people hate me before I even come out behind the curtain. And so I'm going to just back that story up for everybody quickly, because I think that one thing I don't want to be doing is promoting any type of toxic positivity, which I think is rampant right now. We do it for the right reasons, but it doesn't make others feel good. And so I'm actually a student of happiness and really just a student of like, how do we really feel good in our lives a lot of the time? And what is that work that has to happen on the inside of us in order to get those outside results? And so I tell people I am not some sunshine sprinkle unicorn gal who's going to, you know, get out there and rah, rah, rah. The reason, as many times in our life, that we get led to do certain types of work is because of our own journey of struggle. And for me, that goes way, way back. And there's an entire chapter in my book coming out that is dedicated to that. But Jen, I am somebody who suffered with debilitating panic disorder for a big part of my life that completely derailed all my goals and aspirations and who I felt like I was on the inside. And even as a young adult, I struggled to do some of the most simple things. Like, I quit college after a year because I was having these attacks and nobody knew what they were in the late 90s. I just knew I was having these like episodes where I would feel extreme terror and I'd shake all over and I'd feel like I was losing my mind and I couldn't function. I couldn't go to Walmart. I couldn't drive my car 5 minutes to work without it being like this huge stressful thing. And my world got really, really small back then. And really and truly, I just got to a point, Jen, where every 15 minutes of every day was a complete struggle. And then a series of events happened and I began to kind of find my way to the light again through a series of interventions. And one of those was I got my hands on some great books and I really started to rebuild my life from the inside out, you know, using therapists, using anxiety meds, using self-help books and really doing that deep dive on myself. And so I think that the reason I feel so called now to really empower others is because I think that all of us have had some type of struggle in our life or we're in it right now. And we don't talk about the hard. We kind of show up to school. We lead our schools. We have smiles on our faces. We look like we have it all together. But many times on the inside, we're secretly falling apart. And I kind of feel like the way to get to the greatness of our life is to talk about the heart of our life. And so now, yeah, I mean, I know you have a lot to say and I want to give you a chance to respond to that. And then I'll go into my other credentials as well. But how funny is it that, you know, the girl that struggled to walk to her mailbox stands in front of a crowd of 6,000 people now and does the number one fear, Jen, that most of us have, which is to stand up on a stage and have to give a speech, you know?
Well, and I think what's really impactful about that little snippet of a story is it's so important that school leaders keep those stories in mind for the work we do leading, because so many times we look at young people or adults and we think, well, they should have figured this out by now. You know, why are they not done? Why are they not, you know, succeeding and thriving? And your story, and certainly mine as well, and probably everybody who has a pulse, our stories are about the journey and it takes time. It takes so much time. What our listeners should know is we started this conversation before we were recording with me admitting to you that we had both recently turned 50. And I admitted that I thought I'd wake up when I was 50 and be all fixed. I'd be happy. I would be, I wouldn't care what anybody thought anymore. And I opened up to you and said, yeah, that didn't happen. I didn't wake up that morning and I was all done. It's such a journey. And so I appreciate the fact that you're willing to talk about that for our leaders, because I think many of them are carrying their own weights as they carry the weight of their staffs. So tell us about the work you did as an educator and kind of what led you to what you're doing now.
Yeah. So I started out. So when I finally went back to college to get my degree, I was just the most thankful person ever. I mean, I got a teaching degree. I was going to be a teacher. I did it, even though I had panic disorder every day driving back and forth to college, even though I had to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning because I had a great boss who let me come in and get my hours in and then leave every day, or sorry, 3 days a week at noon and drive 90 minutes to college to take classes until 11 o'clock at night because I was a young adult. I couldn't just go to college. I had to have a full-time job. I was married and I was going to school full-time. And so when I finally got that teaching degree and then finally landed the teaching job, oh, I was just full of so much gratitude. And so I spent a lot of my time in fourth grade. That was just my jam. And that's where I really love to be. And then I think, you know, and again, this is another part of the book, but I had a student, Jen, who completely, like, I actually became that person's student that year. That particular child taught me so much about what I really want for students. And I really started to just have this deep desire that, yes, I was always passionate about literacy and teaching kids to read, write, and you know, communicate information and learn their math. But what I learned that I valued most is that I wanted every single student in my classroom, without a doubt, to know that I believed in them and that I was going to make sure that they began to believe in themselves. And I just became on fire with that particular piece. I saw too many students going through our school system that were not smart in the traditional sense of intelligence and how school defines it. And I know myself that there are many ways to be intelligent and that, you know, the traditional school system only honors a few ways. And I saw all of these students who had tremendous things to contribute to the world. They had tremendous skills that weren't being honored. And so my goal was, okay, I have to teach the standards. I have to teach the curriculum, but my goodness, I'm going to be over here on the other side, downloading this whole new script for what is possible for their lives. And so that became a part of later when I launched Strobel Education, because, you know, I started to really get that desire of, okay, you know what, how do I empower teachers who are doing this work day in and day out with students? I also, Jen, ended up being a literacy coordinator. I was a school leader, curriculum director, which I feel grateful for, that I got to operate in all of those different roles and really see what they demanded and what that looked like. And then in 2016, I had my gut that had screamed at me for 2 years to launch off this lily pad and to start Strobel Education. And I say more about that, but I started it. And fast forward all these years later, and we provide a lot of on-site professional development, online courses, and then I do a lot of motivational speaking now.
Okay, so I want to park there a minute, because you said the words toxic positivity. You said, I don't want to be that. And our listeners know that I have a brief story about that, where it was during the pandemic. And I had, I was actually on a run, and I passed my school, and there was a teacher who was working. It was like a Sunday morning at 7 a.m. and her light was on. And I thought it was a very arty, beautiful picture. So I took it and I tweeted it, you know, teachers are heroes. Look at them working through this, whatever. And somebody tweeted back, this is what's wrong with building principles. Their toxic positivity is killing us. I mean, it was devastating to me, Kim, because I had thought truly I was highlighting and lifting the teaching profession. And, you know, you should never let yourself be defined by a tweet. I know that. But how do we lift up and highlight joy? And as you said, I think you said you were a student of happiness. You're learning about happiness. How do we do that and insist on finding the gratitude and the happiness and the silver lining, for lack of a better word, without minimizing how others are feeling? I'm sure you've thought a great deal about that.
That is such a great question. And the thing that always comes into play here, Jen, is as human beings and their perspectives. And while some people probably read that tweet and thought, these people who are in this teaching profession care so deeply about their students. But then yet there's others that are seeing that as, oh, let's just praise that so the rest of us can feel like we're not enough if we're not in there on the weekends. And so what I have found in life is that we all have our own perception. And I feel bad that you got attacked over that. We certainly understand both sides of that puzzle. And, you know, I worked in a very well-intentioned school that on Fridays, they would give someone, like, I forget, they called it some kind of reward. And it was a teacher that they would get on the PE, and they would say, you know, we really want to celebrate, Mrs. Lyons this week. She gives it her all. She's here every day till 5 or 6. We see her car here on the weekends. Like, she, and I remember, because I was reading about toxic positivity and climate and culture, and I remember thinking, I know this is so well-meaning, but because the current education system is so out of control, and not just education, really, Jen, these professions, right? We're out of control. It's like work, 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 you know, do volunteer for everything you can be, coach your kids, play with your kids, do this with your kids, you know, and it's just exhausting. And so the expectation that comes with all of that is really sinking all of us. And most of us are saying, you know what, I don't really want to feel like this in my life on a daily basis, but I don't know how to get out of the expectation of it.
How much of this do you think is rooted in comparisons? Because I know that I really struggle with that. And I get a lot of calls or emails from female leaders in particular who know I'm a mother and say, how do you do it? And I want to say to them, it doesn't matter how I do it. It matters what you're doing and feeling. I just wonder if this sense of heaviness that many school leaders feel is because they never feel like they're enough.
Yeah.
And positivity and happiness feels elusive, maybe.
Yeah. And I think that many of us who are in the education field, and those of us who choose even then to go into leadership, I do feel like, you know, not to place a label, but we're all kind of overachievers, and teachers are too. We're very perfectionistic, type A most of the time. And so I feel like we are our own worst enemy, and we want to starve off the feelings of inadequacy, even though it's not inadequacy if we don't work 65 hours a week. But it's so deeply ingrained in us as far as maybe our personality. And I have this too. But the other thing, Jen, that is kind of tied to happiness is there's a social script that has been fed to us from our parents and our grandparents and teachers and even, you know, media that says, Jen, if you really want to go places in life, here's what you need to do. You need to work really, really hard in school, and you need to volunteer to be a part of every academic goal and committee so that we can try to get you a scholarship and you can get into a really good college. And if we get you into a really good college, now we need you to really buckle down. We got to get that GPA now competing against thousands of people. And we want you to be able to be at the top of your class so you can get the good internship and you can get the good job. And now that you get the good job, boy, it's on like Donkey Kong. Now you're going to be proven to everybody that you're worthy of that position. And we're doing all of this so that because the formula for success has been work really hard, yep, put the time in, don't leave until you're completely exhausted, and do all of this so that you can maybe get the good paycheck, you can get the nice home, you can get the 2.5 kids. And when you step through all of these doorways, now you have arrived at happiness. And we can all giggle and go, we know that's not true, but Jen, I'm following that social script. You know?
Yes. Right. Yeah. And then there's a component too, where you get to that place and you think, wait, am I trapped now? Because I've spent decades getting to this spot, and now am I allowed to break out? And, you know, education is a field that keeps people in. You are an example of someone who followed your heart and took what I can only assume was a terrifying leap to build your own business. But many educators, I think that's why the toxic positivity feels so toxic, is what they might perceive as an inauthentic feeling or an impossible path hurts worse when there's people saying, well, be happy, be positive. And trust me, I'm the one that does that. I generally wake up pretty positive. I'm generally someone who sees the glass half full, but I think it is a career that can feel trapping.
It is. And you know, the last 20 years of research has said that that formula, Jen, for success is completely backwards. That when we as human beings learn to prioritize our happiness and well-being, when we start to bring that to the forefront, it is only then that we're able to move every other lever in our life, from our professional career and how we show up and navigate that, to how we show up in the other important areas of our life. And I think that it's such an adjustment, you know, and I know there's all kinds of like guilt and anxiety that come from when we try to step out of what's called hustle culture. You know, I grew up with like this amazing dad who he was a house painter, and he worked so, so hard for his family in 95 degree heat. And he left every morning at 6:15, and he got home at 6 o'clock, and he had dinner, and then he went back down and prepared paint for the next morning. And I was raised with this really super strong work ethic that I've been proud of. But the problem, Jen, is that if I decide that I'm not going to work like that, like I have had more time at home the last month or so. And so I sat outside for an extra 30 minutes in the sunshine this morning after my run because I wanted to, but I had feelings of guilt for doing it. But I have learned to allow those feelings to come and to do it anyway.
Right. And do you fight them, those feelings? Do you say, no, Kim, I'm allowed to sit here and have my coffee in the sun? Or do you let them, ride? Listeners know I had to make the decision to not drink anymore because, as the saying goes, I had drank it all. So I would have to let those feelings of wanting a drink to flow in and out. Yes. I didn't like them. So my question to you, when you're sitting there and you are actually taking an extra 30 minutes to yourself and you feel that guilt and you feel the years of your dad working in, you know, on your shoulder, how do you combat that? That's something our listeners could probably learn from.
Let's take a moment to thank our sponsors and then we'll be right back. Why is IXL used in 95 of the top 100 U.S. school districts? Because it works. IXL is research proven to benefit all student populations, including English language learners and special education classrooms. IXL is an all-inclusive online learning and teaching solution for K-12 that accelerates achievement, saves teachers time, and more. This one platform helps you accomplish what normally would require dozens of other tools. For example, as students practice skills, IXL automatically differentiates learning to help them master concepts at their own pace. Teachers get real-time insights into how students are performing so they can provide timely support. What I personally love about IXL are the personalized SAT and ACT study plans. Students just need to enter their most recent test score, and IXL automatically generates a custom list of skills they should work on to improve their scores. Discover what IXL can do for your school. Visit IXL.com/PM today. Support for Principal Matters comes from EduSkills. Are you ready to take your school district's multilingual program services to new heights? Introducing EduSkills, the leading software as a service platform for Title III and multilingual program support in K-12 education. EduSkills, founded and led by former educators, understands that multilingual students are an asset to the classroom and empowers educators to provide an equitable education so that all students thrive. EduSkills' cutting-edge technology and services support large and small school districts across the nation with tools they need to enhance language acquisition, increase family engagement, foster inclusivity, and improve academic outcomes. With seamless implementation and comprehensive support, EduSkills ensures a smooth transition for your district, empowering educators to provide targeted instruction and personalized support. So why wait? Unlock the potential of your school district today with EduSkills. Visit their website at eduskillsllc.com or call now at 405-879-9898. That's eduskillsllc.com. Or call 405-879-9898 to schedule a demo. EduSkills, breaking barriers and building bridges for educators of multilingual students.
That is a fantastic question. So first of all, whatever we fight grows. And I have learned this as somebody who has fought with fear most of my life. And so here's what I tell people when it comes to feelings, and there's a lot of research around this, feelings and emotions. First of all, you can't not accept a feeling. Like you can't, it's real. Even if it feels illogical, it is very real. So we have to start by just having some compassion for ourselves and saying, okay, you know, for me, it's the inner critic that comes and she has a name. Her name is Ethel. I don't know if you have your inner critic, Jen, but mine is Ethel, and she's brutal.
She's mean.
She tries to keep me in my place. Yeah. And I'm just like, there she is again. Okay, Ethel, I hear you. But because like the way out of my panic was that I had to do the things that I was scared to death of doing as if my life was on the line. And I had to allow myself to feel the fear, and I had to make the next step anyway that I knew was the right one. And that's why I tell people, like, listen, when I start telling you, you got to get out that door and that you're actually going to be, you know, 31% more productive in your career when I can get your brain to positive versus negative, neutral, or stressed, and you're going to be 10 times more engaged in your career when we implement these happiness and well-being habits, what, you're still going to feel anxious when you walk out the door. I want you to feel the feeling and do it anyway, because we have to retrain the neural feedback loops in our brain, right? And it takes a lot of repetition. I now have clear evidence, Jen, that when I give myself time to play, that it is actually then that I like blow my business up in really positive ways, because I am rejuvenating my spirit. And my husband and I always laugh because he struggles to pull himself away from his job too. But I've been trying to get him to go on more like, oh, hey, I'm going to Naples, Florida for a speaking event. You should join me and let's do a 4-day beach trip. And we always laugh, Jen, because we're sitting on the beach and all of a sudden it's like, you know, oh, I got 3 requests for keynotes. Oh, my husband sold a sign. I'm like, see what happens whenever we give ourselves time. And so there's a lot of research around that, but you're exactly right in that, you know, don't fight it, but also do not let that feeling dictate the action you're going to take. And do not think that you wait to take those actions until you don't have those feelings.
Well, and in a lot of ways, let's honor your dad and my dad for a moment too. My dad was a farmer and a contractor and worked just as hard as your dad. And I bet our dads would say it was hard. There was anxiety, there was frustration, there was boredom, there was all of those things, but they still had to go out and paint the house. They still had to go out and mow the hay. My dad's phrase to me is always, keep chopping wood, honey, keep chopping wood. So, you know, just one foot in front of the other. And that's certainly something I learned in the recovery community too. Just do the next right thing, do the next right thing. And so it might be getting up and making yourself a hard-boiled egg. It might be changing your entire school's master schedule. You, whatever the thing is, you have to do it in spite of the anxiety, because anxiety is a call to us for action, right? It's something saying to our bodies, go, go, go. And so I think the key is to remember, like you did in your, as a younger person, it was crippling. It did stop you. And so tell us, how was there a mindset shift, or was it maturity or time that shifted you to be able to act rather than sit in that pain?
Oh, yeah. And you know, I want to preface this by saying, like, I might always be somebody who has the struggle of anxiety. I mean, I'm 50 years old. I still have it. I still want to cure it. It's not as debilitating as it was. I did have a relapse in 2018 that completely shook me to my core, and I had to rebuild my skill set. But for me, when I look back in my childhood, I was always an anxious child. I could tell I had little anxiety issues all along. But my sophomore year of high school is when these episodes began. And from about age 16 till 24 was just extreme darkness and a struggle in my life. And so there was a moment that I had in the mid-90s. So my husband at the time, he always went to work about 20 minutes before me, which was terrifying, because that meant I had to be alone for 20 minutes. And you can imagine how it feels to be a 24-year-old woman and think you can't even be by yourself. I mean, what this did to my self-worth and my confidence, it was so crushing. And probably there's layers. I think, Jen, that's one of the reasons I'm like this crazy overachiever, which is a positive and a negative, is sure, because there's still that part of me that's going, I'm putting weak Kim in her place and I'm going to let her know, just, you know, but it's like, I'm constantly having to prove to myself, where I'm learning, Jen, that I can show up as this like big, bad version, fierce Kim, but I'm also allowed to create some space for that part of me that struggled and still struggles, and that she deserves to be seen too, you know? And so I actually had a moment where my husband had left for work, and I would usually stand by the wall phone, just trembling all over, getting ready to dial 911. I did this morning after morning for years. And for whatever reason, Jen, I just remember putting the phone on the wall, the backup on the wall, walking to my tiny little bathroom. And in the mid-90s, Jen, the decor was forest green and burgundy. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember wall phones too. I'm glad that you brought us back.
Yeah. And I walked in and I curled up on my forest green bath mat rug. And to this day, I can feel that plushness against my cheek. And I tell this story because it's the truth of the matter. But I pleaded with God to take my life because I didn't want to die. I knew there was this like vivacious Kim that was living in there at one time. But every hour of every day felt like such a struggle of pain to me that I really just said, God, I just need you to take care of this. And I need you to remove me from the earth. And I really can't do this anymore. And I don't care how you do it. Just get me some relief. And I don't know what, everybody's spirituality is different, but I somehow either heard or received some type of message that said, Kim, get up off that bath mat and you get some help because you are made for more. And it was like a series of divine interventions. And I ended up getting an appointment with my general practitioner, Dr. Ress, who happened to be studying anxiety disorders. And he said, Kim, I think I know what you have. It's called panic disorder. And you're not crazy. This is what's happening in the chemicals of your brain. Now you've created a loop that says that you're constantly monitoring every single symptom. If you look too fast one way and things look blurry, it spirals you into a panic, and he put me on Zoloft and he got me into a psychologist and I started doing cognitive behavioral therapy and I started reading all the books. And so when I was running this morning, Jen, a person started their book out and they started by saying, this is for young Jediah who didn't know, like he wrote the book for his young self. And I thought, that's not what I've done with this book. But if I write another book, I think I would write it to the younger version of Kim who thought she would never amount to much.
Well, and I think I'm imagining all of our listeners out there. And I think there's two implications here. One is for ourselves, right? Is to give ourselves that time and that grace and that moment to ask for help. And then there's that of our students, our young people, and whether it's the children we have birthed or the children in our schools, how much of a disservice do we do to those people when we assume they're going to have an easy road of it just if they get these A's, if they just get into this college, if they just get a job? My husband and I tell our kids all the time, 18 to 24 is the hardest because mm-hmm. the world expects you to be all done. You're finished. You're all cooked. But it's hard. It's really hard and it can be deeply lonely. And I love your story because in those dark times in my life, like you, I didn't want to die, but I didn't want to live either. And to me, that's a distinction, right? To not want to live because you don't see what contribution you can make, or you don't see the light, or you don't see a way that in any imagination, it's going to be easy ever. And I think the perseverance and the grit conversations that we hear are a little problematic because you can't hammer out anxiety. You can't hammer out pain or fear. You have to accept it and work through it. And I think for every principal who's taking a walk right now, listening to this podcast or driving to work, there's so much to be learned, Kim, from what you're saying about patience and grace and mm-hmm. I just finished a wonderful book by Leslie Jameson. You should read it. It's called Splinters. And it's incredible. One of the things she says is, the only person in my life I could ever say, please help me, was my mother. She said, I couldn't say it to anyone else. We sometimes we have that person. Others don't have that person where you can say, please help me. And so I think that would be a takeaway I'd hope for our listeners is that they could let those dark things come in and ask for help.
Well, I love several things that you've said there. And, one of the things I think that we preach mental health and we say that we're, trying to do these things with our students, but the bottom line is we're not talking about it enough. And I've actually started to go in and do some keynotes for middle and high school students. And And I did one for a college recently, Jen, and I said, how many of you are currently, like, I told my story first to create the vulnerability and the safe place to share. And then I asked this group, how many of you are currently either struggling with anxiety or pressure or depression? And it took several minutes, but by the end, 75% of them had raised their hand. And I saw them look around, Jen, and I thought, this is the first time they have not felt alone in their struggle. And so honoring that we must, you know, and I think that's actually one of my favorite things to do, because I think that they are in such the struggle mode in their youth that they do not feel like it will ever change and that there isn't a way out. And I want to acknowledge the pain of that, but also plant those seeds of hope that how you feel right now is not dictating where you can get to. And go ahead.
Right. And I think the world's, I'm so sorry to cut you off. I think the world has done us a disservice by telling us you should be happy all the time.
Oh, yes.
I think of happiness as flashes or floods or washing through, but I have yet to meet the person that says 100% of the time today I was happy.
Yes, exactly. And I want to talk about that, because that's a really important piece. But there was one other thing, Jen, that you said that just really resonated with me. Goodness.
Oh goodness, it's because I cut you off.
See, it's okay. It was okay. Yeah, but well, we were talking about the students, but then there was something else that you said.
I think it was maybe about letting darkness. Yeah,
yes. Go ahead. It was when you were saying we must ask for help. So here's what I would just scream this to the rooftops. And I know that we have not normalized this, but I'm going to tell you what, Jen, I have a life still with struggle, but I'm going to tell you what, I have built this beautiful life that is so full of vibrancy. And I'm going to tell you, one of the main ways I've done it is a man named Charlie Martin, who has been my therapist for 20 years. And when any of us think we can figure this out, we're doing by ourselves, I believe we're doing a huge disservice, because you cannot reach, I do not believe you can reach the full potential of who you are without having, you know, like I say, Charlie is part therapist, part life coach, part spiritual mentor. And I call him the great potentializer, because he has helped me do all of this work on myself that was hard, but it led to such elevations in every area of my life. But we still have not normalized that. And especially for men, it's like we feel like there's something wrong with us. And my son, who's 23, first of all, he's known his whole life, oh, you know, your dad and I were going to therapy, we're going to see Charlie tonight. Or, you know, I wanted that to be normal. And he reached out, you know, when he was in that, you're right, that age, you know, he was getting out of college. He felt like, what, you know, I don't have it together. And I was so proud. And I said, you know what, Spencer, first of all, you must know that you don't have to wait until you're in the struggle to reach out.
Right. Exactly. And I think it is, I'm imagining those students, when you said how many of you are struggling, I wonder how many of them looked a little bit to the right. Because they needed to know they weren't going to be the only one that raised their hand. Right. And then when 75% of them did, I would argue it's probably a little bit higher. There were probably a few more who said, well, I'm not raising my hand, but it's still there. Those ghosts and demons that chip away at who you are and what you believe about yourself, they're still in there for all of us. So you have referenced your book a couple of times. Tell us about your book before we wrap up.
Yes. Okay. Well, I want to address your happiness thing, because toxic positivity.
This is going to be a 3-hour podcast, everybody.
I know. I'm going to go really fast. So what we know is that happiness is not like an end destination. So you're exactly right. It's not like we've arrived at happiness. And in fact, we're a mixture of happiness and unhappiness every day, Jen. I woke up and I was super, super happy because it was 72 degrees. Then I opened my email and I saw that we were behind on a project, and I went to unhappiness immediately. Then I took my dogs for a run and I went back to happiness. You know, it's like Arthur Brooks, who wrote Build a Life You Love with Oprah, he said, happiness is a direction. And what we can all do is get happier. We can get happier. And so there's this chapter in the book on the happiness research, which is fascinating. But basically what we know is that 50% of your long-term happiness is genetic, comes from your mom or dad or a mixture of both. 10% of your long-term happiness comes from your external circumstances. Only 10%, Jen. We can take every external circumstance you've ever had in your life, we can throw it all in the pie, and it still only accounts for up to 10%. But if you're like Kim Strobel, you let some people in some circumstances steal way more than 10% for far too long.
Right, right. You know, that reminds me of something my dear friend, Dr. Dusty Miller, says. He was a high school principal, and he said to A1, if he asked parents, what do you want for your high school? They would say, I want them to be happy. And he would say, isn't that the wrong question? The question should be, I want them to have a life full of the skills to manage all life throws at you, that happiness will be a byproduct of a life well built. But parents don't say that. They say, I want my kid to be happy.
I love that description. I love that. Yeah. And so that the 40% that's left of the pie, Jen, that's up for grabs. We know that regardless of your genetics or circumstances, we can increase happiness levels by up to 40%. And that has to do with the thoughts that you're thinking, the actions you're taking, and the behaviors. And so when we focus on that 40%, that's when we begin to change all the other levers of your life. And so, the book, which is called Teach Happy, Small Steps to Big Joy, that book talks and acknowledges that it's not fluff. Like, I call an ace or a spade a spade. And the bottom line is, this profession is completely out of control and overwhelming. The expectations are unreal. But what I want to provide is a roadmap for not how we can change this system, because we can't probably. All we can do is change how we choose to operate in the system. And that's where our real power lies. And when we tap into that, we start to reclaim the other parts of our life that are really important to us.
So it's the same concept as don't go for happiness. It's build the life, build the system. And then you might be able to look to your right and look to your left and see, oh, look, I'm happy. And I have control of that 40%.
Yes, I've gotten happier. I can be happier more of the time.
Exactly. I read Gretchen Rubin's book, The Happiness Project, I think it was called, a few years ago. And I remember thinking, oh, so you can actually focus on happiness. But again, I think we're using happy a little loosely here, because happiness, as you just stated, is wrapped up in a lot of other things too. It's wrapped up in our actions and our circumstances and the decisions we make every day.
Yeah. And I want to end this, Jen, by saying the reason this is important and this is not fluff is that when we can teach happiness habits to people, to our employees or to school leaders, what happens is the research is so unbelievably strong. When I can get your brain to positive, Jen, more times than negative, neutral, or stressed, here's what happens. You are 31% more productive in your job. You are 10 times more engaged in your job. And you are 3 times more. We are laughing. Jen, my computer's been doing this. It's got balloons streaming down.
I know that you guys, listeners, we're not sure why Zoom is doing this. This happened the other day in a class I was teaching. If you start to celebrate something, or Zoom gives you balloons. So I'm sorry, listeners, we're cracking up because she was doing her 1, 2, 3 and balloons came across our screen. So Zoom approves, Kim.
Zoom approves. Yeah. 31% more productive, 10 times more engaged in your job, and 3 times more creative, which means it bolts at the old formula for what success says. And so it's re-engineering our brains to do more of the things that we love and actually get the results we're looking for in our professional life as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. So my friend, Will Parker, who is the lead of this podcast, just so he doesn't kill me for sending him a episode that's an hour long, tell our listeners how they can find you.
Just go to strobeleducation.com, and that's my website, and you can find everything that you need there. And I'm sure the book will be, it's at the top of the menu bar, I think, if you're interested.
Perfect.
that.
Excellent. And we're hoping that book is out and in readers' hands by mid-April, but we don't, Kim and I had a talk offline about how we don't ever commit to a date with book publishing. You don't commit to a date. You're general. You're a little cagey about it. Yeah, sometimes mid-April. So, well, Kim, it has been a true delight. And I do see why this work pulled you in, because you have this incredible energy. And I don't think someone can talk about happiness honestly unless they have felt the other side of that coin, which is deep unhappiness and darkness. So I appreciate your vulnerability. I appreciate that you're willing to talk about it. I am too. And I think the more of us out there that are saying, hey, it's a journey, not a destination, the better. So, all right, Jen. Kim, tell us your website one more time.
StrobelEducation.com.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Principal Matters listeners. And Kim, thank you so much for your time. Best wishes and happiness to all.
You can find free resources like this one at WilliamDParker.com. Subscribe for our free weekly newsletter, which contains bonus material, and also check out the links for Grow Academies, Masterminds, Executive Coaching, and Keynote Presentations for my books, as well as for Principal Matters Associates. You can find out more under our speakers tab at WilliamDParker.com. Thank you for learning together, and thank you for doing what matters.